life of its own. So when I was writing it, I was also thinking about not just Heartland, but what would this be like for a group that's not Heartland? Would it still work for them? Would it serve as a good concert opener or closer for other groups? And how does that fit into my own catalog of works? So those are all extra things that are that I'm thinking about. But in the term of the Heartland season, it's great. I mean, I'm very involved with the group. I've been playing piccolo and a little bit of flute for a while. I'm on the board of directors. I find myself wearing many hats and being a concert greeter before concerts. So it's an organization that I care a lot about, and I'm glad that this opportunity came up and I can give back to the group that really has given me so much over the past couple of years.
When are the performances happening? Where will they be happening? And how can people keep track of, like, when the next performances will be?
Yeah, so we kick off our season on Saturday, October 10th, Charles D. Martin Auditorium in Little Falls, attached to Little Falls High School, at 7:30 p.m. And then again on Sunday, October 12th, the Gitche Zibbe Center for the Arts in Brainerd, attached to Brainerd High School, at 2:30 p.m. Our concerts are free admission, but donations are gladly accepted. We don't want money to be a barrier for people to hear this great music. Just encourage people to come, show up, have a good time, and hopefully they will discover a piece that they might not thought they like and walk away enjoying it and just have a good time. Best ways to follow us, you can visit us online, heartlandsymphony.com. We have a growing social media presence, so find us on Facebook or Instagram. Search for Heartland Symphony. You can learn a little bit more about our musicians. And that's also a good way to stay up to date about the rest of our season and our concerts throughout the year.
Ryan Weber, Kyle Brown, and Steve Zander have been my guests today. Area Voices is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota. And Area Voices here on the Wednesday morning show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton. Support comes from the Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork, presenting Sketches of Minnesota, a civic community comedy tour, on Saturday, October 11th. Doors at 5 p.m., dinner at 6. Open to all with registration required. Info at edgecenterarts.org.
We'd also like to thank Paul Bunyan. Communications are powered by the Gig Zone. They offer fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and Gig Zone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative.
And you are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text word donate to 218-326-1234.
Want to once again, she's on her way to school. Wish a very happy 12th birthday to my BFF, the Cora Braun, is celebrating her birthday today. Hope it is a great day. Hope there is cake involved. It's going to be sunny. Highs 59 to 61 with south winds 5 to 10. Mostly clear overnight with lows 39 to 44. Increasing clouds for tomorrow, Thursday, with mostly sunny skies coming around and highs 63 to 66 degrees.
And we were talking about Sloppy Joe's earlier.
Yeah, we sure were.
And I made the suggestion of putting cheese on a slice of cheese on a Sloppy Joe. And we've heard from Brandon Chase, no cheese on my Sloppy Joe's. Thank you. And I guess I just don't understand where you and Brandon are coming from of this, how you're treating me like I'm saying the most absurd thing as possible is to put a slice of cheese on a Sloppy Joe. I'm not saying, like, put strawberries on your Sloppy Joe. It's cheese. Cheese and beef.
Well, is it beef? That's a question to be answered there, too. But, Brandon, I always knew we were simpatico and you were on my side, especially now when it comes to really important topics involving meat and cheese and all those things. I think there's something, you know, and this is the most I've ever thought about Sloppy Joes in my entire life, but I think it's because Sloppy Joes are kind of a sauce, right? They're a saucy meet that's all broken up. Yep. And it seems like it's its own thing. Like, I mean, sure, a pickle, but it's a whole different texture. Like a cheese on it is just more slop. And it doesn't seem like it would, I don't know. I'm not even a super fan of, like, I like just a hamburger. I'm not even like a cheeseburger person. So
you're saying you put the pickles on the sloppy joe.
Yeah, oh sure, yeah.
But a slice of cheese is too far.
Yeah, yeah, sure is. I don't know. I'm putting that out there. Also, like, if you were to make sloppy joes, would you buy, like, the Manwich can and then ground your beef and then just put it in there? Would you make your own sauce? Okay.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, I've done some where I've made it at home. And to tell you the truth, it wasn't that much better, you know, which I know is not cool to say. But maybe this is going to inspire somebody. It could be a sloppy joe night. Somebody's maybe got a little extra time and is going to throw in some sloppy joes in the crock pot now. And
I'll be honest, it's making me extremely hungry. I would love a sloppy joe with a nice slice of cheese on
top. No cheese. What's happening? Luckily, we have an expert coming in, a food expert. Amy Thielen's going
to
be coming
in. I can't wait for her to agree with me that a slice of cheese on a sloppy joe is not only a good idea, but encouraged.
Mm. Hey, we just heard from DJ Dang. Good luck to the Bemidji High School Follies soccer team in their section playoffs game versus Alexandria tonight at 7. At the Chet at BSU. Thanks, Dan. Wishing them the best. Brandon, oh my gosh, Brandon, how do I not know this about you? He has a secret family recipe, Sloppy Joe's. No can involved. Or do you want me? Yeah, I do want you to tell me what the secret family recipe is. That's what you're asking me, Brandon. Yes, I do. But I don't know. When someone says secret family recipe, I don't think they're just going to text it to you, are they?
I don't know. I've never had a secret family recipe.
They're going to leave one element out is what they're going to do, and it's not going to be quite as good as their secret.
But I would like someone to text in support for me of the idea of putting a slice of cheese on a sloppy joe. This is a thing that exists.
I would just like to know if anyone else has ever even eaten a sloppy joe with cheese, because you're the first person I've ever met.
The restaurant I worked at, that's how they served it. So it has to be a thing.
So you say, what is your second source on that? I don't.
Do you want me to call Davey right now from Victory Lane Cafe?
Yeah, I kind of do. Text us at 218-326-1234. We're getting excited. We get to talk in this next hour about movies and about food, and we'll bring you local news and great music. It's all coming up for you on the Wednesday morning show. We're here because we're people powered. You are making it possible with your donations. You can text the word donate right now. 218-326-1234.
Now we're going to hear headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Former FBI Director James Comey is scheduled to be arraigned this morning in a federal court in Alexandria, Virginia. Comey is facing two felony counts, making a false statement to Congress and obstruction of a congressional proceeding. He was indicted by a federal grand jury last month. The charges stem from testimony Comey gave to the Senate Judiciary Committee 5 years ago about the FBI investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Members of the Texas National Guard have arrived in Chicago under orders from President Trump. Similar guard deployments to cities including Portland are on hold for now, as Andrew Schneider with Houston Public Media reports.
Trump has federalized the Texas National Guard by invoking Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution. It allows Congress to summon the militia to suppress a rebellion or where the president is unable to enforce U.S. law with regular forces. Law professor Jeffrey Korn of Texas Tech University says that rationale may be difficult to argue in court.
All these statements of war zones, and Portland is a war zone, and Chicago is the worst city in the world. When these cases get into court, the administration lawyers have to back that up with facts. And to date, they have been unable to do that successfully.
A U.S. District Court judge in Illinois is set to reconsider a request to block the deployment on Thursday. For NPR News, I'm Andrew Schneider in Houston.
President Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, is expected to join the ongoing indirect talks in Egypt between Israel and Hamas today. They've been discussing the president's 20-point proposal for ending the war in Gaza. Hamas is seeking guarantees that Israel won't resume the fighting if the militants release the remaining hostages as part of that peace agreement. The price of gold has reached another milestone, surpassing $4,000 an ounce. NPR's Maria Aspen has details.
Investors see gold as a safe haven, meaning that they buy it when they're worried about everything else. This year, they're worried about how President Trump is reshaping trade and trying to influence the Federal Reserve, and how all of this could eventually damage the global economic power of the United States. Wall Street seems to have mostly shrugged off these worries recently, sending stock markets to record highs. But the value of the U.S. dollar, which underpins the global economy, is another story. It's down about 10% this year. Now investors are looking for another safe haven, and gold is the winner. It hasn't had this good of a year in nearly half a century since the inflation crisis of 1979. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
Wall Street futures are higher this morning. This is NPR News from Washington. Tennessee's special congressional election in December will pit Republican Matt Van Epps against Democrat Afton Bain. The two emerged as winners of their party primaries yesterday. They will face off to fill the seat left vacant by Congressman Mark Green's decision to leave the House for the private sector. President Trump is endorsing Van Epps for the state's 7th congressional district, which includes parts of Nashville. Researchers say there's more evidence that taking the stairs and other short bursts of physical activity can help a person's cardiovascular fitness. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports on studies of adults in North America, the UK, and Australia.
Short bouts of a few minutes of moderately intense movement a couple of times a day is linked to improved cardiorespiratory fitness, which is the ability of the heart, lungs, and blood vessels to deliver oxygen to the muscles and sustain aerobic activity. Researchers studied adults who'd been sedentary and tracked progress over a few days up to 12 weeks, explained study author Miguel Rodriguez of University of Oviedo in Spain.
Small and consistent bouts of movement are beneficial for health and fitness.
Short bursts of exercise included climbing stairs and other leg exercises such as leg presses, which also helped participants to build strength. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
The National Hurricane Center in Florida says Tropical Storm Jerry in the Caribbean will likely be moving near the northern Leeward Islands by late tomorrow or early Friday. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Kresge Foundation with Pathbreakers, a podcast about transforming communities through innovation, from revolutionizing higher education to supporting artists who are driving change. Pathbreakers is available on podcast platforms.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. It is 8:12. I'm Andrew DeZingel here with Heidi Holton, and I'm very pleased to announce that we are getting a lot of support for cheese on sloppy joes or barbecues or tavern hamburgers, apparently. That's a new phrase I hadn't heard for them. But we heard from our very own Kari Hedlund. The Hedlund House sometimes put cheese on our sloppy joes. Also, fun fact, in South Dakota, sloppy joes are called barbecues, which is also what we called them in Stephen, Minnesota.
And we did get the recipe from Brandon. His secret family recipe for sloppy joes, and they never have cheese on theirs, by the way. And I won't give it exactly, but it is, I'm going to maybe use it, but I won't, you know, we've got hamburger, Worcestershire, soy sauce, mustard, splash of apple cider vinegar, sprinkle of brown sugar, and then onion diced in there. So
we also
how do you feel about onions in your sloppy joes?
I'm fine with that.
Okay. I just want to,
I'm not nearly as precious about my sloppy joes as you are.
We heard some more here.
We also heard from one, a sloppy joe is a sandwich and all sandwiches deserve cheese. I agree with that. We heard from Betty from Nevis. My mom was the school cook. This is a long time ago, 60 plus years. She made taverns at school. I still use her recipe.
But you didn't mention cheese there, Betty.
That's true.
All right, I'll lay off. I know a few weeks ago you were getting a lot of business from DJ Dang about your green smoothies and whether you even eat vegetables. And now here I am bugging you about Sloppy Joe's. So
yeah, there's no rest for me in my culinary world.
It's Andrew DeZingle. I'm Heidi Holton. It is Wednesday morning and we get to talk movies now.
Yes, Edge Center for the Arts and Big Fork's classic movie series continues tomorrow night. They'll be showing the 1968 horror classic Night of the Living Dead. And here to talk more about it is Jack Nackbar. Welcome to the show, Jack.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. And good morning. So, and they're coming to get you.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, what with Night of the Living Dead, I first saw it just a few years ago. It's always been one I've been meaning to see because it's like synonymous with the horror genre. But for people that may not know, Jack, what's this movie about?
Okay. The movie is about, as they say in part of the film, flesh-eating ghouls during one horrific night. And what it really ended up being was the first great modern zombie movie, which has been instrumental in influencing almost everything, all of the flesh-eating ghouls that we've had, like a couple hundred of them in movies since that time. So it really was a big influence on horror movies after the 1968 when it came out.
Is it, when you saw it first, Jack, did it scare you?
Yeah, it scared the wits out of me. I had read in a Canadian film magazine that it was a really scary movie, and I'd never heard of it before that. But then it came to our local, at the time they had them, drive-in movie theater in Ohio, and a friend of mine and I decided we'd go see it. And it was not very well known. This is 1971 or so locally, but we went and it was playing on the bottom end of a drive-in double feature, and it just scared the wits out of the two of us. We had to roll down the windows because we were steaming things up. And I was grabbing the steering wheel, and I thought I was going to break it off. I was so
wow,
so scared. I mean, it was a genuinely scary movie for the two of us then, and has kind of remained that way in all my memories ever since.
And do you think it's because of the way it was filmed? Because it was kind of like, it was very, not a necessarily an independent film, but kind of shot almost like a new wave film, which was kind of becoming the style in Hollywood just starting at that time. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was an independent film, actually. George Romero, the director, the editor, the writer, did everything in the movie. His career, mainly up to that point, had been making commercials for television. And he decided he wanted to get into, to try to make a film out of Pittsburgh, his hometown. And so he formed a little subsidiary company to do that, and they made it for almost nothing. This movie came in at $114,000, chump change in terms of film industry. And it went on to make over $30 million over a period of time, including being a really huge smash hit in Europe. I read someplace that Night of the Living Dead was the top film in Europe that year. And it made almost 300 times the initial investment, making it one of the most profitable movies ever made, actually.
So that's interesting because it's a movie in the public domain, right? Like, I feel like that's kind of a common thing with George Romero's movies, is they seem to be like the owning status of them. It seems to be always up in the air.
Well, of course, I don't know what it was. Maybe they just were so relieved to be finished with the movie, or they didn't quite know what they were doing. But they failed to register it, and so it went into public domain. There's been about 10 or 15, I think, different knockoffs I've seen of that movie on first of all, tape, and now on DVDs. And so it was commonly available in various stages of clarity.
Do you think that's helped its reputation by being like such a very well available movie?
I think so. I think it probably has. That's kind of been the trend, I think, since videotape came out. That once those movies came out, if they had been marginally successful at the box office, they could sell a whole lot of copies and turn themselves into profit. So that's been a key part of the whole popular movie process.
And so what would you, for George Romero, like, for this being his first movie and kind of making an instant classic, how would you describe George Romero's legacy in the horror genre?
Well, it's unmistakably significant. Not hugely prolific. I think he did like 12 movies in his whole career. Some guys got into 50, 60 films and stuff, but he did only 12. But he made 4 sequels to A Night of the Living Dead. And in 1978, 10 years after the original, he made a color one, Dawn of the Dead, in which the zombies are located in a shopping mall, of all places, and the movie's in color, and it's really good.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite George Romero, is Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah. So, and the other ones, apparently, people say, I haven't seen most of the rest of them, but they're not as good, I guess. I had an undergraduate student once who was a film studies major, and he got a summer job in Pittsburgh working for George Romero to be a production assistant, and he ran around and got coffee and stuff and came back and said that, and he'd had talks with Romero, and he'd had a good time, actually. And I don't know how much it changed his life, though.
Well, I know the story I heard from George Romero was when he was making the movie Creepshow with Stephen King, and there's a scene that has to involve a bunch of cockroaches, and he found out while filming that he's deathly afraid of cockroaches, and he found out Stephen King was also very afraid of cockroaches, and they're like, what are we doing on this movie?
Well, I don't think there's a single cockroach in The Living Dead. But it's not a buggy movie.
So, Jack, when you're like choosing a movie just to watch on your own, do you choose horror movies?
Yeah, I like them. Okay. Although I tend to miss some of them now, I think. But yeah, I've always kind of liked them. They went on TV, a lot of the early ones, late 1950s. They were on usually late Saturday evening TV, and they didn't particularly scare me. But then in 1960, I went to see Psycho with a young lady, and that Alfred Hitchcock picture had not been advertised or anything. It was kind of out of the clear blue sky, and there it was, opening night. And we sat there and watched the movie, and it scared both of us to death.
Oh.
That film did at that time. And the young woman I was with got so scared that in one scene she tried to climb underneath her seat to be safe.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I think that kind of piqued my interest in them, in good ones, and having those kinds of shock things. So they've always been kind of interesting to me. I actually at one point taught a whole course on horror movies way back again when I was doing that.
Well, so tomorrow it's going on at 6:30. There's also going to be a new exhibit opening up at the Edge Center for the Arts before the show, and then the movie right after. What else can you expect tomorrow, Jack?
Well, for the first time ever, it'll be for people who want it. You don't have to come to this earlier, but otherwise, if you would like to, there is a twofer. There's, I think, an interesting opening tomorrow of a Edge Center gallery exhibit, and there will be a little bit of treats served, and then right at the as that finishes, the movie will be at 6:30 as usual, and so that'll play, and you could go right from the exhibit to the movie. But that's of course not required. Those who just want to see the movie, just come at 6:30 and as usual, and see the film. I do want to put a warning here. Don't bring the kids. Okay. This movie was released in 1968, a month before the rating system came out. Ooh. So there's no rating on it. But I think it was for sure it probably be rated R, especially in the late 1960s and stuff. And so leave the kids home if you want to come out and see this movie.
Jack, will you show a classic cartoon from 1968?
We will be showing a classic cartoon from 1960.
Okay.
And it's going to be a little bit different because it's a scene from a movie that might involve the Fabulous Four.
Oh, very exciting.
Before we let you go, Jack, would you put a slice of cheese on a sloppy Joe?
I would.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Jack.
I wouldn't insist on it.
Okay.
A good sloppy
All right.
Joe is a All good right. sloppy Joe, but cheese is good.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Jack, for joining us.
Always a pleasure to talk to you folks.
Yep.
That is Jack Nackbar, retired professor of film and pop culture, hosting and curating the Edge Center for the Arts Big Four Classic Movie Series tomorrow night, free and open to the public. Just heard from Grand Rapids saying, Gus wants us to know that the Grand Rapids soccer team, we want to wish them good luck in their section game. It's against Cloquet tomorrow. You can text in to 218-326-1234.
Now we're going to hear from our album of the week. It's Say She She. The album's called Cut and Rewind, and this is the title track. And that was Say She from their new album, Cut and Rewind. That is the title track. That is our album of the week. You can text us what you think about the album of the week at 218-326-1234. You're tuned in to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holtum.
We receive support from the Watermark Arts Center in downtown Bemidji. They have exhibits, classes, and handcrafted original art made by regional artists found in their shop 505. The center is accessible and open to the public, watermarkartcenter.org.
And we receive support from AW Research Laboratories located in Brainerd, providing water testing for private wells, real estate, lakes, and wastewater since 1972. Online at awlab.com.
We appreciate the text coming in about the important topic of Sloppy Joes today. And after local news with the Up North Report, Amy Thielen is going to be in the studio with us. If you have a question for her, it does not have to be Sloppy Joe related. Maybe it is, or you want to tell her about how the fall's been going. Have you been making stuff out of your garden, putting it up? I have friends who are spending like days making tomato sauce with all the tomatoes they got.
Oh, wow.
Putting them away. And we'd love to hear from you this morning. You can ask her a question by texting 218-326-1234.
Time now for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. Two people from Park Rapids are facing multiple felony charges for their roles in an alleged attempted murder early Saturday morning. Court documents accuse 43-year-old Charles Justice of entering a Hubbard County trailer home and stabbing a man. Deputies responded to Piney Park around 3 a.m. on report of a man bleeding with possible stab wounds and his 5-year-old daughter screaming for help. The victim was airlifted to Fargo for treatment of his injuries. Justice allegedly admitted to using methamphetamine and believed his wife, Danielle Westfall, was having an affair with the victim. Authorities say 51-year-old Westfall eventually admitted to helping Justice dispose of the bloody clothing from the assault. A pair of blood-soaked jeans were found on the side of the road as part of the investigation in the same area where Westfall said she disposed of them. Both are set to appear in court on Monday. The state of Minnesota intends to seek a stiffer penalty than usual in the criminal sexual conduct case against a former teacher at two Iron Range schools. 43-year-old Ryan Denzer Johnson of Embarrass faces three felonies after he allegedly sexually assaulted an adolescent female relative. Denzer Johnson was most recently a high school math teacher at Mesabi East in Aurora until his resignation shortly before the charges in August. He also taught at Northeast Range in Babbitt and was involved in both schools' robotics teams. The prosecutor filed a notice of intent to seek the upward departure of sentencing guidelines based on aggravating factors. One of the factors is the victim's particular vulnerability due to her age and relationship to Denzer Johnson. The second factor listed in court documents is that the alleged offense was committed in a location in which the victim had an expectation of privacy. Denzer Johnson remains jailed in St. Louis County, and his next court appearance is Monday. The Black Duck City Council passed an amended cannabis ordinance after a lengthy public hearing on Monday. Larissa Donovan was there and has more.
The zoning amendment removes the required buffers around schools and daycares for cannabis manufacturers and cultivators, leaving the buffers in place for dispensaries. Cannabis entrepreneur Alan Bonset, with his company Nobo, wants to buy the former Anderson Fabrics manufacturing plant in Black Duck's industrial area. But the plant is less than 100 yards away from Black Duck Head Start, an early childhood center. With the changes approved, Nobo is that much closer to its proposed cannabis cultivation and manufacturing facility that promises up to 150 new jobs. Residents raise concerns ranging from excess phosphorus in wastewater and potential crime increases to the business's proximity to Head Start. In response, Bonset cited the company's intense security protocols and technical procedures, the industry's heavy regulation, and his company's practice of investing in their people.
We're also a company that offers employee stock options to our employees. And in fact, we are in the 97th percentile of all cannabis companies nationally as far as what our benefits offer.
Mayor Max Gillette says he checked in with his counterpart in Benton Harbor, Michigan, where Nobo purchased an old foundry, and that he felt assured that the company would do right by Black Duck.
Nobo is a company that put its money where its mouth is. And Alan's the type of person that when he says he's going to do something, he does it.
Councilmember Lori Hamilton agreed with most of the council, saying with the state's legalization, they can't manipulate ordinances to keep out cannabis.
I don't feel like this company is coming in here to wreck this town. I feel like they're a business. They have a product.
Larissa Donovan, KAXE News.
Lakewood Health System will host an open house for its new cancer center 4 to 6 p.m. Friday in Staples. Hospital leaders say the addition was built to meet growing needs for rural oncology care. The new center offers things like a dedicated reception and waiting area, infusion bays, exam rooms and a procedure room, in-house scan systems, and radiation treatment technology. This is the second new cancer center in the region to open this year. Astera Health and CentraCare hosted a ribbon-cutting ceremony in Wadena in July. Without centers like these offering services, rural cancer patients often must travel long distances to get the care they need. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday morning show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heidi Holton. We receive support from L&M Fleet Supply, carrying a variety of products for your next outdoor adventure with 13 locations across the Northland. More at lmsupply.com.
Thanks also goes out to ICTV. Stay tuned, stay connected with ICTV. You can learn more at watchictv.org. Going to be sunny today, highs upper 50s to low 60s across northern Minnesota with south winds 5 to 10. Clear overnight, lows 39 to 44. And increasing clouds tomorrow, then sun with highs 63 to 66 degrees.
Now, I wasn't sure going in today that Sloppy Joe would be a topic of conversation.
You weren't sure, but you thought it might be.
I always think it's a possibility. But now we have someone who can really weigh in on the debate going on throughout this morning show. We have a very special guest. Joining us is Amy Thielen.
You know her from her cookbooks, from Ham Radio, and we're glad to have you back in the studio.
So good to be
here.
Feels
like 2 seconds ago, and yet it was months ago. But
I know.
Here's Amy to talk about this. So let's give you the little background. First, we've got a couple of new texts that came in about it and see. We heard from someone who said, OMC Smokehouse in Duluth has a lentils and quinoa sloppy joe, so spicy with pickled onions, jalapenos, and no cheese. Highly recommend for a veggie option. So how do we describe our debate that has happened here that's driven a wedge between you and me, Andrew? Let's be honest. Is
what
cheese or no cheese in the sloppy joe has been the big controversy.
What kind of cheese would you put in the sloppy joe?
You put cheddar.
Really? Does it melt?
Sometimes if it's hot enough.
Oh, you're garnishing it on the top with cheddar?
No, I just put a slice on top of it and then kind of let it heat up, and then it kind of like gets a little melty in there.
Okay.
See, it seemed wrong to me. It just sort of,
I mean,
because a sloppy joe is sort of a sauce, for some reason, like a red sauce, it just seemed weird, which makes no sense because you put cheese on a red sauce.
I think you're kind of verging toward chili without beans territory with the cheese, personally.
Which is my dream chili without the beans.
Maybe what you have devised is a hybrid. I have never put cheese into or on a sloppy joe, but hey, I'm not gonna judge.
Okay. Well, people feel strongly about it, and I probably shouldn't have just jumped the gun and saying it was wrong. It's certainly not wrong.
Yeah, we heard.
No, there's nothing wrong. There's no wrong answers here.
Weird.
I really, you know, I remember growing up with sloppy joes, but not necessarily at my mom's house. She didn't really make that, and so that was like something I would get at other people's houses or like at the scoop dinner, like hockey scoop dinners.
Oh, okay.
Do you know a scoop dinner?
No.
Oh, so a fundraiser at, like, the Legion or something. My brothers were in hockey, and there's always fundraising for hockey. And so a scoop dinner is just everybody bringing in things that are scoopable, like, dish or sloppy joes or macaroni salad. And you have a ice cream scoop. It's like a lunch lady sort of.
Sure.
It's not really that sexy or appealing as a fundraiser, but that's what it was. It was the Scoop dinner, and there were definitely Sloppy Joes at the Scoop dinner, because Sloppy Joes, I feel like they should be thick enough to be scooped like that.
Yeah.
Onto the bun in a mound, like an ice cream size.
That was definitely ball. What our school would do is the ice cream scooper to scoop it on our buns.
You don't want a soggy bun.
I mean, it can be a little loose, but not.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose it's the timing, right? I mean, you need to eat it pretty quickly after it's scooped. Yeah. You don't let it sit or anything.
I mean, honestly, you know, I prefer in that category of sandwich, the made right without ketchup, because I'm not a huge ketchup fan.
Oh. So you probably don't have ketchup on your hot dogs either?
I don't.
You do mustard?
Yeah.
Relish?
Mm. Sauerkraut. Oh. I mean, so German.
Wow. Yeah, you were. We also heard from Suzanne.
Yes, Suzanne from Virginia. We always have cheese on our Sloppy Joes. I make homemade Sloppy Joes with a can of tomato soup, mustard, ketchup, and brown sugar. Longtime supporter from the state of Virginia. Thank you, Suzanne. And we also heard from another person. Sloppy Joes are the ultimate birthday party food for kids' birthday parties.
And that is true.
We also got another one. Think of a Sloppy Joe with cheese as a cheese sandwich with a meat sauce.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Oops, that was out loud.
I'm so sorry. You did say that. It came out kind of a whimper. No.
I don't know. It just got into that. But yeah, you don't. Are there any made right opportunities around northern Minnesota? I believe the Barn in Brainerd still serves made rights downtown. They have a breakfast.
Yeah, you know, not even that long ago in Detroit Lakes, there was kind of a made right.
Yeah,
place.
Where you scoop the meat out of the counter kind
well,
of thing.
Well, no, they make cooking. It for you, but it was really good. Okay. I loved it. Yeah. You know, speaking of the Range or Duluth, which is not the Range, but my friend Bruce Engebretson, friend of Ham Radio, he told me about a sandwich that he's from Grand Marais or has relatives there.
Right.
I don't know exactly. Is it the Grand Marais? An area around there. Eveleth, maybe? Or where they made a sandwich called
Hovland.
The South...
Hovland, I think
South
you said.
American?
Oh.
Have you heard of this?
No.
I should look it up. But what it is it's kind of... It's a Sloppy Joe-ish thing.
Okay.
But more like... it has olives. It has... vegetables... So like a sofrito, like onion, pepper, tomato, you know, celery, and then a little bit of tomato, and then meat, and it's a little bit spicy, but not really spicy.
Right.
And then olives, and it's kind of more of like a picadillo from South America, and they make it, it was all best recipes invented in a bar.
Sure.
Okay. By a bar owner to... You know, keep people drinking or
right.
heal them as they drink.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a thick meat mixture. Hmm. So it's definitely in the realm or the family of Sloppy Joes and Made Right. But so if anybody knows about that, please call in. need to know more.
You can text us 218-326-1234. Let's talk a little bit about, we're into the fall. So I haven't seen you since you know, I'm sure you've had a very busy gardening season. Mm-hmm. What's happening in the kitchen when it comes to the garden, and what have you kind of put up for preserves or frozen or done any of that?
Yeah, you know, this year was great for basically everything. My tomatoes were good. My beans were good. Cabbages were giant.
Wow.
Peppers were big. Eggplant even. So, and then apples. You and I were talking about that because I know you grow a lot of fruit. We had so many apples.
Yeah, we did too.
I mean, just bonkers. And my father-in-law he also has a lot of apples and pears and stuff like that. And so he bought this really nice apple press.
Oh, like I want to hear about this. We made our own.
Yeah.
Out of weird plastic buckets. And
that's impressive.
A whole wooden, very, very, I'll have to take photos and send it to you. But anyway, tell me about the press.
Well, so he bit the bullet and bought this thing, and it's like very nice. Mm-hmm. And so we went over with all of our bushels and bushels of apples and pressed it all. And so we got 36 quarts of apple cider. And that filled up one of our two top-loading deep freezers.
So tell me about how you're putting in, what's the process before you press them, or is there no process, just full apples going in?
No, just plain. So you just wash them and press them, and then each, you know, different trees, different kinds of apples taste different.
Yeah.
And so we were labeling those, like this is State Fair cider.
Yeah, we had some
State Fair. What is it, like a Honeycrisp we grow.
Mm-hmm.
That was very sweet. I fermented some on the counter just by, you know, you can
make some Applejack there?
Just hard cider.
Okay.
Which I'm sure you could do in a much more precise and better way, but I just put one of those like airlocks on it and just let it sit, and it turned into something that is, I think, alcoholic.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I did that one year and I could kind of feel the effects. So I'm like, I think this is a little alcoholic here.
But we don't really know how much.
So, you know, this is something I think we probably go too far in our processing, because like we kind of made the whole thing up. We didn't ask anybody. We didn't look it up. And Tom made the whole cider press thing that we do. It works great. Like, looks like a small guillotine that's in our kitchen right now and stays there for months. It seems like, because we've processed the early apples. We just picked all the Honeycrisp last night, and we'll eat a lot of those, but and give them to people, but we'll also make some cider out of those. But so we've been like not just washing them, but we sometimes core them or take the bottom and the top out. That's our process of like, I do that part, and then we put it in the food processor. Then we put it in this bag, sort of mesh bag that goes in the thing.
In the
press,
and you're pressing it. Well,
yeah.
So this,
we stopped being as precise on like whether there were seeds in there. Because like at first, the first year we did it, we were like spent way too much time thinking we can't have this in here. But we could probably just plunk it in, huh?
Well, I think that, you know, people who do make a lot of cider. Yes.
Okay.
Just whole washed apples.
Right.
I don't know that you don't want leaves.
Yeah. Right. Or dirt. Yeah, I mean, you got to clean it off.
But. Or apples that have any holes in them, I take those out. I just chuck those in the wood.
Yeah.
In the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. There were so many chucked last night, I'm telling you. With so many. Bees are enjoying their apples, though, so that's good.
Yeah.
Right?
So what do you do with your cider? How much did you get this year? How much do you think you'll get?
We have a lot. I don't know. We filled up our freezer. We give it to people. People have come to know us as fancy bottle people, so when they have extra bottles, they give them to us, so then we kind of do this trade-off. And if you get cider, I should have brought you some today, but if you get some, then
I should have brought you some today.
What about Andrew?
We're just blocking him off due to the Sloppy Joe incident that happened. But anyway, I don't know. It lasts us for a long time. We just drink it and we share it with family. Like, if you know, special occasions. Tom's favorite thing is to take it out of the freezer and when it's almost like an apple cider slush.
Oh, yum.
Wow, is that good? Yeah.
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 So when we filled up the one freezer with just juice, I knew we had kind of a problem. So then I was like, okay, what are we doing now? And past that point, I started reducing it.
Oh, okay.
And so I would take, you know, gallons of cider and just like put it in my largest, widest pot and just bring it down slowly over time, which really smelled good that day, the whole house, great. And then it got darker and thicker. And when the bubbles started to get a little bit big, I cut the heat, let it chill. And it was kind of just a syrup, like a light, you know, pourable. But that is the stuff. I started making it because there's this recipe I always wanted to make, and it's shaker. You know the shakers, right?
Yes.
The sect of people who kind of, I don't know if they're really
Quakers,
around.
Quakers, Shakers, Amish, kind of, I mean, not
They were
all.
Non-procreating, the Shakers, you know, so.
Oh, okay.
I think it's just a manner of recruitment now, right? Anyway, their cookbooks are really cool.
Okay.
So they're kind of known for like, the way that they cook is really simple and lots of fresh herbs and make everything yourself. But something about their vibe was, you know, very New Englandy. Mm-hmm. And so they would use that reduced apple cider as a syrup, and they would use it as a sweetener in the same way that around here people use maple syrup.
Oh, sure.
And so they would, there's one recipe I saw and then tinkered with and made up, and it's like you pour some of that apple cider syrup into a baking dish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you drop like a scone mixture or stirred biscuit mixture on top of that and bake it. It's really good.
Huh. Wow.
I should have brought Andrew that.
Yeah, no kidding. The syrup. I do make a, it's a recipe that's like Amish apple fritter bread kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty good.
That sounds like, good.
You kind of have layers of the bread. I mean, it's really not a bread. It's basically a cake in a bread pan. But,
well, what is the difference?
Right. We just do layers of, you know, the dough, then the, you know, I do like 3-4 layers and almost, you know, created sort of made it more my own of like I'm almost stir frying the apples before I put them in there with syrup that we collect too.
Cinnamon?
And, yeah.
Like big lines of cinnamon?
Yes. Yeah. Totally good. Anyway.
That sounds great.
If you have a question for Amy, you can text us at 218-326-1234.
So Amy, around this time of year, it's always been like, a meme on like Instagram or Twitter and stuff of people saying like, as soon as that first leaf falls, I'm shifting into soup mode. Are you that type of person where it's like you are thinking about soups already?
Yes. Yes. I've already made some.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, really for me, like the soup time is once we start making fires in the house, in the wood stove. Because I have that cooktop. Mm-hmm. And so then it's like you have to make soup because what you're wasting heat if you're not making soup, you know. So I cook beans, you know, all day, like a dry bean. And then I make.
I like that he's not agreeing. He's going, oh, beans all day. Okay.
Well, I work at home. It's a, you know, so yeah, I have no excuse. And then I make like a vegetable soup, kind of a minestrone, but I'd like to put, again, sauerkraut in that.
Mm.
And then some pork, but a little bit spicy, a little bit sour. It's really good.
You've been making sauerkraut then?
I didn't this year. Okay. Even though I had this giant cabbage, I don't know. I still have a bunch of cabbage. I can. Cabbage are giant.
We got a question coming in from my house of what's the new apple press? Do you know how else to describe it? The one that you went to?
You know, I can look it up.
Okay, we'll get that. We'll get that to Tom.
I'll get it to you.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from you today, 218-326-1234. Also want to put a thank you out. Folks, continue to support us and donate, especially after the loss of federal funding. We just heard from Louise from Minneapolis, making sure that KAXE, she said thanks for letting me stream friendly voices from up north. Oh. Thanks for being with us, Louise. We sure appreciate that. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
One thing I had this past weekend that I've never tried before was lob. I went to a Laotian restaurant.
Oh, cool.
And
where was that?
It was in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the restaurant off the top of my head right now.
Yeah.
What's lob?
It's very spicy. I know that.
Yeah. It's like... Technically, I guess a salad, but it's a ground meat salad. So it's cooked and then tossed with like lime juice and fish sauce and chili.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then you wrap it in like a little leaf and then you eat it like a wrap.
It's really yummy. What kind did you have?
We had the chicken one.
Yeah, that's good.
And it was tasty, but man, I went through 13 glasses of water.
Oh wow.
It was really hot. Yeah. It can be really hot. Yeah.
So Amy, you mentioned this vegetable soup that you like to make.
Uh-huh.
How do you make a soup tasty and not, you know, if you're spending where you can taste the individual vegetables? I know that sounds weird, but
no, not at all.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Okay. So actually I have a lot of theories about this.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times people, when you put raw cut vegetable into water or broth or your stock or whatever, sometimes like carrots and onions, they don't taste good. Mm-hmm. So you have to saute them first.
Okay.
And a lot of times, actually, the best way to do it is to use a different sized vessel or pot. So I use like a large saute pan to make soup. Which sounds very odd.
Oh.
But let's say you're going to, you know, you saute your onion and then you put the carrot and the celery and then whatever else, your pepper, your cabbage, what have you. But they all get a little bit of that thyme in the fat and salt, and they kind of retain their character. They, you know, you give them just a little toast. I'm not saying you have to cook them to a mush or anything.
Right.
But you saute them and then you add your liquid.
Okay.
you know? And if you were using like bacon or sausage first in the soup, you do that first, take the meat out, and then saute the vegetables in that pork fat.
So it's about the steps and seasoning, no doubt, matters.
Yeah, seasoning like a little bit all the way through,
right?
You know, as you go, rather than, I mean, this is a pet peeve of mine, is that as a recipe developer myself, oh, it's a lot easier just to tell somebody to put all the salt in at one point. Do you know what I mean? From like an editorial standpoint?
Yeah.
But from a cooking standpoint, it makes a lot more sense to, let's say you're going to use a half to one teaspoon of salt for a big pot of soup or whatever, more, I don't know. But a little bit at a time so that each part of it gets seasoned. So
right. I think I became a better cook when I realized that, like, you know, there's a while where people were kind of talking a lot about low sodium or whatever. So I kind of wasn't cooking much with salt. I didn't realize this is not to make something salty. This is to make the flavor of something come out.
So it tastes like itself.
Yes.
Because if you look at like a can of beans, the sodium level for some of these is through the roof. Like it's very, very high.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for recipes and ways of cooking that where you're adding a can of this or a can of that, at any point, you hardly add a lot of salt because there's so much sodium in a can of beans.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
Like a lot. And so for you to make some beans that have even near enough that you'd use like probably 1 to 2 teaspoons.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
There is a pizza restaurant that has, it was like the first time I had a veggie pizza where I just loved it. And it was because you could taste each vegetable. It felt like other pizzas I had, veggie pizzas, were sort of like just the mush, like a soup would be if you just piled it all in there. Mm-hmm. And it's like the best thing ever. Because like, oh, I can taste the green pepper. I can taste, you know, it's like you can just.
Maybe it was like roasted at high heat.
Yeah, I bet it was. Before it went on the pizza or something.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And not, cool. And yes, it must have been because I also, what could be a problem with veggie pizza is it's too wet because they, you know, they haven't gotten the moistness out of the vegetables before it went on there or something. So it made it really wet. I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I don't want a soggy pizza.
No, or a soggy sloppy Joe bun.
What's wrong with a soggy sloppy Joe bun?
No, I think what you're saying is like, it's interesting actually because, you know, vegetables, they do kind of sweat out, they say sweat out liquid as they cook. So you got to, you know, use that to your advantage instead of a disadvantage.
Right. Okay, so we're almost out of time. We'll be bringing you Headwaters with Kari Hedlund. She'll be taking over. Give us a little idea of something, as Andrew asked you about kind of fall, like what would be something good and warm to be cooking in the next few weeks? That's so general, but what might you be cooking that's an easy dish?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
I'm asking the audience, too. So I made something the other day that was really good. I have these huge cabbages, right? They're almost 2 feet tall, this one.
Wow.
It's the size of it. It's a cone shape. So basically think like Saturday Night Live cone heads.
Yeah.
Like really that size. That's how big it is. It's comical. And when I cut it and I brought it to the kitchen and I cut it in half and I was like, laughing because it's so like all this water's kind of pouring out of it and I had to put it on a sheet tray. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like butchering this cabbage. I feel like I'm like cutting up a roast or something. But what I did with one of them was I started to take the leaves off and then I blanched some of them off, you know, and I made this big meat pie with pork inside.
Oh.
So like, okay, you take a springform pan, you know, a cake pan with the removable bottom or side, and lined it with the blanched cabbage, and then I put pork mixture, like a meatloaf mixture, but with pork in that pat down, and then more cabbage, and then it got, and then butter, and then the whole thing got brown. I mean, it was really rich.
So it didn't actually have like a crust. The crust was the cabbage.
So, you know, like a cabbage roll.
Yeah.
But one giant one.
Oh, nice. Huh. That's a great tip. We just heard from Joni. She wanted to know, can anything be done with corky carrots?